Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economics show entitled Money Matters. Before we begin, please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and our opinions only, and may not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending us an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com or by visiting our website, moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome to the 205th edition of our Economic Forum show entitled Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Today's show is entitled The Ongoing Greek Tragedy and Other Money Matters. Today we'll cover the latest on housing, the industrial military complex, some immigration news updates, some interesting movements in junk bonds and the latest in retail sales, and finish out our show on the ongoing Greek tragedy and their debt problems. Money matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, and in some way or another, control the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, money matters is about you. Thanks for joining me today. Into the Money Matters mailbag, you can send me an email at moneymatters@kvmr.org, no matter where you're listening to the show. Or send a note to your program director at the radio station where you are hearing the show. And I answer each and every email sent to me. Mark, I just purchased a one-year dream portfolio subscription. Feel I need someone at Schwab who knows how to execute some of your recommendations. May I share the files with an agent I find? Well, you can share the information, but you can't give them copies. That stuff's copyrighted written material, but you can read from it. I have no problem with that. Mark, I love your rant about taxes. Very insightful. May I post that on my Facebook page, acknowledging you as the author of it? Well, sure. I wrote a little rant on taxes. Made it into a newspaper or two, I think, and on a newscast. And it goes something like this. The history of our federal income taxes is convoluted at best. And a quick summation of its inception tells us that although federal income tax was ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 1895, the government persisted until the 16th Amendment was enacted in 1913, allowing the collection of what we now know as our federal income taxes. The effective rate, adjusted for inflation back then in 1913, was 1% for incomes up to $475,000. Compare that to today's rate of roughly 30% for the same income. Despite the obvious direction taxes have taken over the decades, some people just keep voting for more. Berkeley voted in a tax on soda, and a city near me voted to tax campers at local campgrounds. Berkeley constituents who supported the tax for the tax on soda amounted to nearly three-quarters of those voting, and the campground tax at a city nearby was unanimously supported by all members of the city council. So I have to say, let's see now. We get up from our bed, which we pay tax on, and hit the alarm clock, which we also paid a tax on. We step on our taxed carpet attached to the house we paid tax on and turn on the water and flush the toilet, which is also taxed. We turn on the heat, which has its own tax on the fuel it uses, and fix breakfast using appliances that were also taxed. We dress, shave, and use hairspray, of which all had a tax at some point, and then we get in our car that it had a sales tax, a registration fee, and has a yearly tax. If it's a foreign car we own, whether we know it or not, we also paid more for it because of the tariff taxes.
We then close the electric garage door, which was taxed when we bought it, and then pay tax on the electricity to activate the darn thing. We drive down the road, paying a road tax and a gasoline tax, and go to work where we pay income tax on what we earn. We then pay a variety of taxes to support people that don't bother to work, then pay a Social Security deduction, which the government told us would be saved but is now replaced with IOUs, and then incur even more taxes levied by the cities, counties, and states we happen to live and work in. Our investments have all sorts of taxes on them, and we basically pay tax on just about everything we do, buy, and use. We also pay taxes on our home phone, our internet usage, and television through a plethora of cable and communication taxes. We even pay taxes on the air we breathe and the water we drink through clean air levies and water taxes on property bills, and pay again through a variety of corporate taxes that they pay to the EPA to keep things clean. We eventually get tired of working to pay all those taxes, so we call up our travel agent on the cell phone, which was taxed when we bought it and is taxed monthly and also when we use the darn thing. We decide to fly somewhere on our vacation and then pay an airport tax, parking tax, and our flight is also taxed. The hotel we stay in taxes us, and the boat trip we might take to go fishing then hits us up for its own special fuel charge tax. All the things we buy are taxed by the truck, plane, or train that delivered all our stuff. And then when we have a heart attack because of all the taxes we paid, the hospital taxes us for the pacemaker we need through a special medical device tax. If we die, whatever money we happen to have left over is taxed again when our kids inherit it. Now, with all those taxes we pay, not counting the taxes I forgot to mention on this show, because listing them all would have taken 5 or 6 shows, some people still vote for even more taxes. Now, with all those taxes we pay, I ask you, is it me that's crazy for shouting no more taxes from the rooftops? Or are the people that vote for more taxes the crazy ones? I really don't know anymore. But the one thing I do know, this whole tax thing is very taxing. All right. Stevie Ray Vaughan, the tax man. We can identify with that, can we not? Well, the latest on real estate. Home price growth accelerated in much of the U.S. in the fourth quarter as low mortgage rates and improving employment spurred demand. So say those in the know, I guess. Median price of an existing family home rose from a year ago in 86% of the 175 metropolitan areas measured. And what's interesting here is that government-controlled Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, those are the people that back 90-something percent of the home loans, have taken additional steps to make it easier for, quote, working families to buy a home. They have the banks package up the loans, mortgage brokers package up the loans, and they sell them to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And they are now taking down payments as low as 3%, a drop from the 5% for most loans. So 5% down, you could have bought a house. Now they dropped to 3%. And home sales are still fairly in the dirt. But I would ask you, dropping down payments to 3% and making it easier for people to qualify, does that sound familiar at all? Does to me. They're also making it less onerous for banks to have to buy back loans that go sour. So if we have a bad loan, the banks have to buy back that loan. So they make sure they're careful when they make the loan, or they'll end up in their lap again. But they're easing those requirements as well, which means you will pay for any of the loans that go sour, or at least a portion of them, because the banks won't have to. And doesn't that sound familiar again? It's rather interesting, isn't it? FHA says that they will serve borrowers who don't have a lot of savings and have lower incomes. Julian Castro, Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, said the changes were intended to make home ownership more affordable for working families. I see. So they're affordable right now for non-working families? That sentence doesn't even make any sense. Make home ownership affordable for working families. Well, you could just give them the home or make no down payment like we did before. And maybe that would make it a lot easier. You have to wonder. History doesn't rhyme exactly, but it does. Well, it doesn't repeat, they say, but it does rhyme. And it is rhyming again. Unbelievable. We never learn. The housing bust happened because people didn't have enough skin in the game. And they didn't have enough down payments. Easy money from the feds allowed the banks to package up multiple billions of dollars of home loans. The banks went hog wild on doing their thing with little regulation from the Federal Reserve, who's supposed to regulate those things. So the banks had their part in it, of course, signing up people who didn't understand what they were signing, which was supposed to be taught to you by your fathers and mothers. Is that what I thought? And, of course, the appraisers were in on it, appraising houses for much more than they were worth. The realtors, of course, were the drug pushers of all the houses and just kept saying, you have to buy, prices will keep going up. Okay. Never heard any of the National Association of Realtors Associations take any blame for pushing all those houses. I guess they could say they were just supplying a need, much like a heroin dealer does on the street. A heroin dealer would say, well, the people want it, and I've got a supply. I'm just a middleman. I'm not responsible at all. Okay. So we'll see if home sales continue their ascent with now 3% down payments. If they don't, you can pretty much rest assured the down payment requirements will be dropped again, and full circle we come. Meanwhile, President Barack Obama formally asked Congress to authorize military action against the Islamic State, saying the extremist group has committed despicable acts of violence and would threaten the U.S. if not confronted. A three-page resolution sent by the White House to Congress limits the authority to 3 years and would prohibit enduring offensive ground combat operations. I hope so. In a letter accompanying the text, Obama told lawmakers that the authorization would provide flexibility to conduct combat ground operations in limited circumstances, such as the rescue of personnel or the use of special operation forces to target Islamic State leadership. So the Marines won't go in, the Navy SEALs will. What do you think about that? I know a lot of Obama supporters, I didn't vote for him, a lot of Obama supporters thought he was going to bring peace. But they're awful quiet when we hear about this. I mean, I think a lot of you out there that supported Obama are probably not going to support this. I sure don't. We've got military bases in hundreds of places around the world, and we have the largest military budget ever by any country in history, and by three times of what the next guy below us spends. So, there you go. On immigration, the White House plans to appeal a Texas judge's order blocking President Barack Obama's executive action on immigration that sought to protect about 5 million undocumented immigrants from deportation. The court action, filed Monday by U.S. District Judge Andrew S. Hanen in Texas, temporarily halts the administration from carrying out the policies. What do you feel about that? That's been kind of a firestorm of debate, hasn't it? A lot of people support it, a lot of people against it. Interesting. Very interesting. The judge blocked the administration from carrying out the executive order while the legal battle plays out. The ruling is likely to become political fodder in a standoff in Congress between Republicans seeking to reverse the order and Democrats who have maintained a united front in the Senate against even debating the matter. White House spokesman John Earnest said in a statement, the district's court decision wrongly prevents these lawful common sense policies from taking effect. Well, lawful, I guess, is what they're going to debate. So how do you feel about that? Republicans are fighting it. And so on and so forth. The order, which he dictated would allow undocumented parents of U.S. citizens to apply for a work authorization under a deferred action plan that would spare them from deportation. Mm-hmm. First part of Obama's expansion would protect children from deportation was set to go in effect Wednesday. And we did a couple of shows on the plunge in oil prices. Good for the consumer pocketbook, but too much of a good thing is bad for the economy, as we're finding out. Despite the massive layoffs we're seeing in oil companies and related industries, of which there are many, the bigger threat, in my opinion, is the potential for problems in the bond market. Now, the bond is just an IOU, as you all know from listening to this show. And the IOUs of all the companies and the countries and everybody else is traded in the bond market. Kind of a big Coliseum arena, all electronic nowadays for the most part. The bond market is gigantic. It's the biggest market in the world. Problem is when the price of oil drops, oil companies, all the related industries, will have trouble paying their debt. And while oil was skyrocketing, a lot of companies took out loans to drill new fields. And because the Federal Reserve dropped rates to ridiculous levels, those loans were fairly cheap, which has caused a bubble in oil prices. I keep telling you, cheap money from the Federal Reserve causes bubbles, many bubbles. And when loans are cheap, marginal companies, those swimming naked, as Warren Buffett has said, borrow money and drill for more oil. So low interest rates not only punish you out there who are trying to save money in a bank account, low interest rates fosters bubbles, and here's another one it's fostered. Close to 38% of the bond market is related to oil loans. So not quite half of the loans in the bond market, 38%, is all oil related. So that means as oil has dropped in price, these companies that make profit from oil don't make a profit anymore, and indeed some will lose. And what happens is when a company has to service debt, even though the price of oil is dropping, it must continue to pump oil to pay what it can. It can't just say, well, we don't want to increase the supply. It'll make prices drop further. So we got to keep pumping, even if oil drops more. We got to keep pumping because it's our only source of revenue. We're an oil company. So as the price of oil plunges, companies will try to pump more to pay their debt, which further adds to the glut. So the bond market could be in trouble. But despite that, investors are now piling back in to high yield, risky, or junk exchange traded funds and mutual funds since December. More than $5 billion or so has gone into these junk bond markets over the last couple of months. It was an uptick. We did see as the oil prices started to fall that people started to get out of bonds, and now they're piling back in again. So I keep saying that we don't know which hedge fund, which bank, which bond fund, which bond market is going to be slammed because of oil prices falling. They're not quite naked yet, but as oil prices stay low, you'll begin to see companies starting to say, hey, we can't make payments anymore. And we can't make payments on not only operations, we can't make payments on what we owe, and some bonds will start to default. So I still am not a fan of most bonds, as you know. I'd rather buy dividend-paying stocks for income. Most investment advisors sell you junk bonds for income, but you can get income from dividend-paying stocks. The difference is bonds are giving your money to companies that need it. I need your money because I don't have any. Well, I'd rather give money to a company that says, I don't need your money, but if you buy a share of my stock, I'll pay you just as much as a bond will. And you get some tangible asset instead of just an IOU. Ignore at your own peril, as they say. Sales at U.S. retailers fell more than forecast in January. Of course, gasoline sales were in there. So, of course, receipts would fall as gasoline prices go down. But we also saw declines in clothing and sporting goods. It was a 0.8% drop, which followed a 0.9% drop the previous month. That was worse than forecast. I don't really put much stock into forecastings. If you take out the gasoline sales were not as bad. So some of that is to be expected with lower oil prices. But we do expect that consumers will spend some of their savings from the gas pump in the markets. And we are seeing an uptick in restaurant revenue, interesting, and SUV sales. Now, the SUV sales, that's really surprising to me. People are saying, well, gas is low now, so I'm going to go out and buy an SUV. Now, do you have an obvious concern with that? What would be that concern? I'm going to go out and buy a gas guzzler because prices are $2.50 a gallon. Well, prices could do what? Go back up, right? So, is that short-sighted? So, I'm sure the auto companies, which make a lot of money on SUVs, are happy, and indeed their sales are plodding along fairly briskly, if plodding and briskly could be put in the same sentence. So, it's short-sighted. And restaurants, of course, people are eating out more. They find more money in the wallet at the end of the day. They'll say, let's go out to eat, honey. So, they don't seem to be saving a lot of it, which is the short-sighted consumer. Indeed, the consumer, like a cockroach, is spending a lot. Retailers Index, RTH, is making new highs. So we're very resilient spenders, borrowers, but we seem to borrow to spend. That sounds familiar in another large institution called the U.S. government, borrow to spend. It's the new American way. Indeed, it's the way of most people around the planet. So we'll see what happens on the retail sales market and how consumers fare. We are seeing a rather flattening of economic activity from the institutions that study that sort of thing. Stagnant is what we're seeing. And Federal Reserve came out and they basically said, they kind of placated the markets a little bit. They said that we have to be patient in raising rates. Now, I told you they would never stop QE, and if they did, they'd have to reinstate it. So they stopped QE, and I recall that they would initiate QE again in summer, fall, or December of this year. And I said they wouldn't raise rates. If they did raise rates, it would only be for two reasons. One, because they said they would. And they don't want to look bad. We said we'd raise rates, so we will raise rates. And two, if they do raise rates for that reason, which is the only reason they'll do it, so they have some credibility, is they're only going to raise them 0.25%, which won't do anything to you savers out there for your income. It will be a token raise. And that'll be it. And then they could say, see, we told you we'd raise rates, and we did. Now, if they raise rates 0.25%, I'm not quite sure how the markets will react. They'll either go up or down. Well, what good is that? A variety of authors that I'm reading saying that the rate increases will come and will crash the markets. I don't think that'll happen myself. After my diligent analysis of reading 30 to 70 pages a day, every day, even vacation days, I believe that the token raise may cause a knee-jerk reaction in the markets, but they may even go up after they raise rates, signaling that investors think that raising rates is a vote of confidence by the Federal Reserve. I don't think that's really the case, but it may be perceived as that. Or investors could think that more rate increases are coming, and that could stop the market. So on the market direction, if they raise rates, I don't know. I'm split. I know that doesn't help you much. So I do think over the long term, the markets will continue up. That's not to say that we might have frightening falls, which will make you question your sanity on being in the market. But I think still, Federal Reserve believes that printing money is the solution. And as long as they print money, we will see prices rise and stocks rise as well. So remember, the price of a Starbucks will follow the price of the Dow. As far as the Dow is concerned, it had hit 18,000 and some change again for the third time. And as I'd mentioned many times before, big round numbers, 15, 16, 17, 18,000, usually are points of resistance and support for the market. Markets ran up to 18,000 in small change, 18,046, I believe, somewhere in there. Fell hard, then came up again to about 18,000 and some change, right in there somewhere. Fell again. And I mentioned on a show that could be a sign of a double top, which is when something hits the top twice, it falls hard. There is such thing as a triple top. You know, us economists and market analysts always have another phrase to cover our butts in case we're wrong. There's something called a triple top. I haven't heard of a quadruple top. So if it tops again and falls, I can say triple top. But if it hits again, then I can only talk about basic resistance. But so it did touch over 18,000 a day or two ago, I think yesterday, and now it is deciding what it wants to do. It is at 17,997. So 18,000 is the hurdle here. I said to a guy in a gym yesterday, he said, what's the Dow going to do? I said, well, if I knew that, I'd sell the farm and be all in. Nobody can tell you that. I think what the Dow will do is that if it goes over 18,000 and remains there for a few days, 4 or 5 days, and starts to resist 18,000 on the way back down, then I think we're on to 19,000. So remember what the Dow does, your portfolio will do, which is why I keep saying you don't need to pay anybody to handle your money. You could just buy some index funds and some big dividend payers and do just as well. I did put out a bet on the newsletter and on the air. I bet $1,000 cash. Any investment advisor out there wants to take me up on the bet, I'll bet you. I'll tell you. I'll warn you. I haven't lost an economic bet in 20-something years. And I'm going to put it out there. If you got an investment advisor or firm and you think you can beat the indexes in the period of 12 months, I'll bet you $1,000 you can't, minus all your fees and commissions. $1,000. And what we do is we pick a day and you show me an average portfolio with at least 20 holdings in it. And you do whatever you want all year to that portfolio. And at the end of the year, minus your fees and commissions, if you beat the combination of the S&P, the NASDAQ, the Dow, and the Russell equally weighted, then I'll pay you $1,000. If you don't beat it, then you pay me. And nobody's taking me up on it. Now, considering there's many, many stations that carry the show, and many advisors probably hear the show, and many more that take the newsletter, nobody's taking me up on that. I don't know why that is. $1,000 isn't that much money, dudes. Come on. If you're confident in your trading and you think investors need you, then make the bet. I'll pay. I always pay. So we'll see. Anyway, the Dow is right below 18,000. It's trying to push through. So we'll see what happens. And I'm reading a little news piece here.
Walmart
will give 500,000 employees pay raises, succumbing to pressure that they don't pay enough. They're going to pay $1.75 above today's federal minimum wage of $9. Okay. So there you go. And 10 years from now, the minimum wage will be $20, $25, and they'll have to do it again. Minimum wage increases. Minimum wage requirements don't work. I know everybody thinks they work. That's what you've been taught, the propaganda of the Federal Reserve, you know, roundabout way, but they don't work. If they worked, you wouldn't have to keep doing it, okay? But I know a lot of you out there support that, so you're going to need more every year. But what do I know? We'll be right back to talk about the problems in Greece that still haven't gone away. And how big of a surprise is that? Turner, Joey Allen. Probably some of the most underrated guitarists on the planet. Those guys rocked for Warrant. I'll tell you what. You gotta admit, you listen closely to those guitar leads. They're smoking, man. So, yeah, Joey Allen was kind of a wild man, for sure. So the problems in Greece. What has happened in Greece? Well, years ago, I told you when they started quantitative easing, it won't be enough. And the last 2-3 years, I've told you that European problems haven't gone away. They've just been buried under the fecal matter of quantitative easing and bailouts. So what happened is Greece is on its coming up on its third need for another bailout. They basically spent too much and can't pay. And being part of the European monetary group, which uses the euro, Greece can't print its own money to pay its debts. It must borrow it. And there's a big family of nations that are part of the euro. And the European Central Bank was established to administer the euro and distribute it. And when that euro, the statute for the euro currency was set up, there were rules. And of course, as things got worse in Europe, the rules have been broken and challenged and circumvented, all under the auspices of it's all legal, but in truth it's not. But Greece went on the austerity program. They were given money to pay back its loans, pay its bills. They get a loan, and the conditions were you have to cut back your spending. Oh, we know it as austerity. So they got the first bailout, and they kind of cut back their spending. But what happened is because the Greek government was a large part of the economic spending. When the Greek government cut back its spending, the economy tanked. Unemployment in Greece for the younger generation is 50%. Economy is mired in muck or mung. Mung is unidentified food substance. Muck is unidentified non-food substance. Those are my own terms there. And so they needed another bailout, and they kept up their austerity, and the economy just could never get out of its own way. It couldn't get on its feet, and they kept having to borrow more and more money. Well, now they're back for another loan. And all the other countries that have to pay for this bad brother-in-law called Greece says they don't want to give them another loan unless they continue with austerity. Well, the Greeks elected a liberal party under Syriza, the name of the gentleman. Young guy, 40 years old. I think he's 40. And he ran on a platform, no more austerity. Well, we're going to have the government spend on you guys, so vote for me. And they did. Voters vote for their pocketbooks, of course. And Syriza went in there and said, look, you know, we're not going to do this austerity thing anymore. It's hurting. So you're going to have to give us money regardless. In Germany, the deep pockets of the euro group, and therefore have the most bang for the buck, are saying, no, we're not going to give you another loan unless you agree to the previous terms. Well, Greece has threatened to leave the euro, which they know will do two things. I don't think they realize what it'll do to their own economy when they leave. Okay? But the first thing it'll do, it'll hurt the euro, because as soon as Greece withdraws from the euro, it's going to default on everything it owes. It's going to say, nope, we're not paying. If we're going to pay, we're going to pay in our new currency, which was our old currency before the euro, the drachma. The drastic drachma. So that's, in essence, a default or a partial default. So it's a game of chicken, Greece saying they'll withdraw from the euro, knowing that the euro currency and the European Central Bank will witness much stress on the euro currency if that happens. And, of course, the holders of Greek debt, which are the banks and the hedge funds, will take a bath, and that will cause systemic problems again. And, of course, when the large banks, you know, have problems with sovereign debt from Greece, they go to the central banks to bail them out, much like we saw in the Asian crisis back in the mid, I think Asian crisis, maybe it was a Mexican crisis. Well, there were a couple of them back there. I think it was early 80s, we had a Mexican crisis. and the government bailed them out, and then we had an Asian crisis, and the government bailed out the banks again. See, these banks gorge themselves on Greek debt because they pay a lot. The banks also know if Greek defaults, they can go to the central banks and say, look, this Greek debt defaulted, we're in systemic problem, we're in a problem here, we could bring down the system, so you have to bail us out. That's what we've come to nowadays. Tails, the banks win. Heads, the banks win. So Greece is now saying, well, we're going to kind of meet you halfway, but we're still, you know, going to drive this thing pretty hard on a partial default and not going to do the austerity thing anymore. And the European Central Bank is saying no. So they're at an impasse here. Now, one of the bigger problems is if Greece backs out of the euro, for Greece, what will happen is it will print drachmas, probably drachmas, and it'll start printing it till the cows come home. And because the drachma is a small currency contained in a small nation, the drachma will immediately start to lose value, and you will see massive inflation in Greece. I mean massive, such like you see in Argentina. It is also trying to print its way out of its problems. So the Greeks may think that they're going to get out of their debt and have tremendous public spending to pay everybody, but they have no idea. Maybe they just don't realize or don't want to realize that they're going to see horrendous economic problems after they finish up with the party. The other problem is that Italy and Spain and some of these other countries that also owe a lot of money and can't pay might look at Greece and say, hey, look, they did it. Why don't we do it? And more countries will pull out of the euro. Now, the euro, in my opinion, is a failed experiment. You can't have a common currency for many different countries because a currency is like a stock for a company. A strong currency means the country is strong. So you can't have the same stock for Apple that you do for Starbucks, that you do for Sears, that you do for JCPenney's, because the health of each nation is different than the health of the next one. And so if you do have the same currency, you end up having the beggar countries borrow from the countries that make a lot of money, and the countries that make a lot of money don't like that. They don't like paying for somebody else's debt. So the euro is a failed experiment. It will fail in its current form, is my prediction. It has been the prediction for a long time. You know, I used to own, and on this show, we used to have you own the yen and the euro and the Swiss franc and the Canadian dollar and the Aussie dollar as a basket. Years ago, I put out a sell the yen alert. No longer were we going to be in the yen. It was a right call. Yen got hammered. And then shortly thereafter, I put out sell the euro. And they got hammered. So we were right on that. So Greek lenders are urging Central Bank Governor Yanis Stournaris, hope I pronounced that right, to seek additional emergency cash. Because what's happening is the Greeks are pulling their money out of the banks. We call it deposit outflows. They're accelerating. What's happening is people that have their money in Greek banks, which are denominated in euros, are afraid that we may either see a bail-in, much like we saw in Cyprus, where the banks run into trouble and they just take your money out of your bank deposit. It's ours now. It's a bail-in. Or they convert euros to drachmas, which will immediately start to lose value. So we're seeing Greek depositors withdraw their money and probably converting it to gold or silver or converting it to euros that they will hold at home. And that's putting stress on the banks because, as you know, banks don't have the money that's been deposited in them. They've lent it out or gambled with it. So Greek banks are teetering and they need money. They want emergency funds. Stournaris, Central Bank Governor Yanis Stournaris of Greece, is meeting with European Central Bank Governing Council colleagues in Frankfurt, looking for emergency funds to support the Greek banks while they work it out. Banks in Greece are kept afloat by the Emergency Liquidity Assistance Lifeline, extended by the Bank of Greece itself. And that is subject to the European Central Bank. So they're bleeding from all orifices here, and like I said, it will never be enough. We are seeing that right now the European Central Bank's chief economist is warning central bankers around the Eurozone not to delay more quantitative easing. That would cause extreme stress in the system if they did, and they must print more money immediately. And what else is new? The European Central Bank will print money and effectively buy Greek debt. And so round and round we go. Sound familiar? It's just, you know, you got to realize quantitative easing doesn't do anything because it's just printed money. I mean, if we could print money and solve problems, why are there problems? There are prices to pay for printing money. And, you know, the Germans know that. Germans think back to the Weimar Republic where they had printed money to pay for World War I reparations, and they basically had wheelbarrows and wheelbarrows of money. And it was a story out. The guy had a wheelbarrow of money outside of a store, and the person's people stole the wheelbarrow and left the money because the money was worthless. They were using it to burn in fireplaces to keep warm. That's not going to happen to the U.S. dollar, in my opinion, but it could happen to the drachma if Greece gets its way. So if I were a Greek citizen, I would be careful what you wish for. So only time will tell what will happen. The markets are kind of ignoring the Greece problem right now, a little bit sensitive to it, but not really in crash mode. Gold and silver look like they were about ready to run a little bit, and they did run up $100 or so. And then now they're kind of backing off again. So we don't know whether this is going to be another head fake for gold and silver. But when paper currencies go bad, then people flock into those. So we're not quite sure what will happen. The bond market has stresses on it because of the oil loans. And the bond market has stress on it because of Greek debt, although the Greek debt is assumed going to be bought by the central banks of the world. The euro is definitely, you know, in question. So it's interesting what's going on. It's just more distortions in an otherwise larger problem that really haven't gone away. But right now outside, people are spending money on restaurants. So what the hell? And that concludes our show, number 205 of Money Matters, our economic show entitled The Greek Debt Problem and More Money Matters. Feel free to comment on the show to the program director at the station you're listening to it on, or you can send me an email directly at moneymatters@kvmr.org. Copies of the show, transcripts, send me an email. And we'll see if we can help you out. I want to thank you all for listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Watching the market so you don't have to. Stay tuned for more Money Matters. And if you'd like our newsletter, Au Grata, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, just send me an email at moneymatters@kvmr.org and we'll put you on the email list. My name is Mark Cunaberti. God bless. Have a great day.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on this show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. you can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com.